It's Friday the 9th of February. This is Meet the Movie Press. There is so much to talk about this week. Kick off with Super Bowl trailers. The Joker, an update on that Origins movie, Cloverfield. And who's been reading for Tarantino's new movie? I've got that scoop coming up. This is Meet the Movie Press. See you in a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talks, Meet the Movie Press.
Hello, welcome back. Sorry, I'm slightly disorientated there for a second. I have absolutely masses to get through and something else just popped up in the chat that we need to talk about. We need to get going, Dimitri.
Okay.
In case you're wondering why Jeff is not here this week, unfortunately, Jeff has gone through a whole box of tissues with his nose. He's got the flu. He hasn't been watching a constant stream of porn for a week. So unfortunately, he's not here. But it is his birthday tomorrow. So happy 73rd birthday to Jeff, who looks good on it.
He doesn't look a day over 72.
He doesn't look a day over 72. And obviously, I'm usually in that seat. And Jeff is over here. I am over here. So in that seat is Dimitri. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's awesome to be here.
Now, where can we find you on social media?
At DMovies1701. Uh-huh. At DMovies1701. And you can also find me on the Popcorn Talk Network's Anatomy of a Movie.
Which is, what are you guys covering this week?
The Post. Can't wait to do it. And I believe they're also going to be doing Call Me By Your Name. Unfortunately, due to my busy schedule, I haven't been able to see it, so I can't partake. I mean, I could, but it would just be lying. So I'm just going to go.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
But I'm very excited to do The Post. Anatomy of a Movie is a great dissection of a movie. It goes above and beyond opinion. You've been on the show.
I have, yeah.
And we talk about the production aspect of the movie and what's very tricky. We have to talk whether we love or hate a movie. We still got to give the movie love and how it was brought to the light of the silver screen. So The Post will be this week.
And just justify why you like it or don't like it.
Yeah.
Because going, that shit isn't good enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, we do
this
talk about
this is not
script.
The internet.
Yeah, and because it's been sort of kind of slow with the releases, we're catching up with a lot of the Oscar-nominated movies.
So talking of the internet, my favorite quote of the week from the internet, we're going to get to the film that this referred to later on. This week I was referred to as a shallow, inexperienced, naive YouTuber and a dumb millennial. I'm not a millennial. The others I can't comment on, but there you go. So, Dimitri, thank you for joining us. Seriously, it's a terrible movie, but we'll get to that later.
Awesome.
I was like,
holy cow.
If you don't like my writing, just Google me. I'm literally old enough to be your fucking dad. I'm not a millennial. Anyway.
See, and I was buying the millennial until he told me you're not one.
I think it was just Clint that didn't like my review. But we'll get to that later.
But you know, speaking of audience and reaction,
yeah.
Oh my head, was there a lot of writing? I was on a couple of weeks ago, and we talked Baby Driver.
Yes.
And I made the claim that I believe I can categorize it as a musical.
Musical, non-musical debacle.
Holy cow.
Which I thought was going to end in a knife fight, I'll be quite honest with you.
Did
but
you
it
really?
Didn't, no.
No, 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 no. Actually,
set to music, so makes it a musical.
Actually, I had some amazing conversation with the Meet the Movie Press audience.
Yep.
One person actually, like, we kept the dialogue going, and we ended in laughing. So that's the greatness about talking about movies.
Absolutely. There is no right or wrong. It's all just opinion.
Well, listen, the way I look at it is I'm not always right, but I'm never wrong.
So let's find out how true that is, Dimitri. By the way, if you're wondering who the hell I am, if you don't watch the show, this is maybe your first time, or you love Dimitri and you're wondering who this little sure, bald, right. Like Harry Potter with alopecia, I often get described as, or a low rent Simon Pegg is quite nice, or a bit like Ricky Gervais, but without the money.
There you go.
All the talent. My name is Simon Thompson. You can find me on Twitter at ShowbizSimon. Same for Instagram. And there's also a page on Facebook. Those two, actually. There's mine, and then there's the one about me, which is This is Simon Thompson. I often post a lot of my work for IGN, for Forbes, for Reuters, for E! News, for BBC. A lot of people that I work with, I often post it on there. So if you want to kind of catch up on what I'm doing, that's where you can come. Okay, we need to get started because we have a gazillion things to get through. A story that broke this morning, which we didn't discuss before, called the show. Lobo. This is a comic book movie that we know has been in the offing for quite a while. Turns out that Michael Bay is going to be in charge of this one. A lot of people are going, oh, another Michael Bay movie. Oh, Lobo. Not a character I'm familiar with. Right now, I think for us as a film community, I think we're going to be enjoying this. We're going to be interested in this casting and this direction choice. But I don't think anybody, I think we're kind of at that point at the moment where audiences aren't going to be engaging with this. But what are your thoughts on it?
When you say Michael Bay is going to be in charge, he's producing or directing or both?
I will just be very specific on that. Let me just check, because I want to be absolutely...
Either way...
I believe it's directing, but let me just double check because I didn't write that down.
I am not a Michael Bay hater.
Okay.
I think, is he going to be Academy Award nominated movies? No, but as a visual storyteller in action movies, I think for the most part, I think he succeeds. The Transformer movies are what they are. You got to check your brain in and everything else in at the concession stand and go and you have a good time. But you can't deny movies like, Bad Boys is a fun movie.
Great movie.
The Rock is a great movie.
Yeah.
He even made that science fiction movie, The Island.
Yeah.
Which was probably not his
Which
biggest
gets
movie,
a lot of a, shit. And I'll be honest with good, you, I actually enjoyed that movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
So, yes, you can point and say, oh, this is craptastic or whatever. 13 Hours.
Yep.
The Benghazi movie. Again, if you don't like Michael Bay, watch 13 Hours, which is unlike Michael Bay, but it's a solid movie.
Current status with Michael Bay is the fact that he is apparently talking to Warner Brothers about this, but he also wants to try and cut the budget a little bit.
He wants to cut the budget.
Yeah. Well, no, he wants to call the budget of around $200 million. This is a story that broke this morning, which I haven't had a huge amount of time to check up on. But yeah, so, he wants to have that kind of... thing.
And I've talked about this about him before too. He doesn't use second unit. He doesn't have a second unit. He does it all himself.
Yeah.
Which I find to be fascinating.
So. Yeah, but no, he does want to come in at that 200 thing, which for him is quite is unheard of, because he usually takes as much money as he possibly can to be able to put on some of the action sequences and stuff like that. I've had a lot of conversations with directors about this recently. I actually enjoy sometimes, it's great to give people as much money as they want for a budget to put whatever they want on screen. It's sometimes better to give people those restrictions, and sometimes the directors do this themselves, where they say, I'm going to work on a small budget and choose to do this, and I'm going to still make a great movie, but at a fraction of the cost. And I actually find, certainly in the last couple of months, certainly perhaps last year or so, we're seeing a lot of better movies coming out. When there isn't so much money on the table,
absolutely. Where
you have to be more creative,
absolutely.
Where you have to make it work more.
Sometimes happy creative accidents happen that make bring a movie up to 100%. Another level. James Wan himself had said when he worked, coming from movies like The Conjuring, low-budget horror movies and Saw, when he did Fast and Furious, he almost didn't know what to do with the money. Like it put him under... a lot, a big amount of pressure that he felt when he went on a much smaller budget movie. He did feel that he could be more creative.
Now, people in the chat, Dino is among the people who've raised this and said that Bay should make a Superman movie. His style is perfect for it, the Americana of it. Also saying that his signature shot of the hero slowly standing in frame while everything circles around him is made for Superman.
Absolutely.
Do you know what? When Dean said that, I was like, the last thing I want to see is a Michael Bay Superman movie. Now, I actually really quite fancy seeing a Michael Bay Superman movie.
Yeah, I mean, he gets Dino's so correct in the Americana of it all.
Yeah.
The first and foremost that I've learned about Michael Bay and doing, we've done a lot of his movies, so there's a lot of research. Yes, he is American made, so to speak, and he loves the jingoistic and the American, he loves the military, number one, in such
100%.
Great respect. And there's always the flag is somewhere billowing in slow motion. He gets that, and I agree with him. I would love to see Superman in that slow-mo shot with that flag behind him. I think he would be perfect for a Superman movie.
And Zeno, who's a regular contributor to the chat and obviously a regular view of the show as well, says Lobo is an over-the-top violent super macho riff on Wolverine. Bay is perfect for this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another really good point.
I agree.
So
I've got no, again, I'm not a Bay hater. I think
no. The right projects, he's done some great stuff.
I think so.
He's done some really enjoyable, great action popcorn movies. Popcorn can't deny movies. That. Popcorn
yep.
movies.
Yep.
Which is great. Why we talk about them here. Let's stay with superheroes for a second. This is another story that's come through in the last couple of days. Joaquin Phoenix apparently in talks to play the Joker in the Joker standalone movie. This is the one that's, I believe, Todd Phillips. The Hangover is going to be at the helm of. Some people, I mean, there have been lots of names that have been put in the hat for this. Joaquin Phoenix is an actor that sometimes I absolutely love. And sometimes, I don't know why, but he does, his performances mildly irritate me. And I think this, the fact that sometimes that happens, I would actually really like to see him as the Joker. Because even though I think I'd enjoy the performance, it would have that awkwardness to it.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that DC is going back to its discomfort level. They're going back to, like, remember after Keaton with Batman, right?
Yeah.
And then it seemed like we had Val Kilmer play Batman. We had George Clooney play Batman.
Yeah.
They just don't have faith in the character. Albeit today's world, DC has at least been consistent with Cavill as Superman, Affleck Batman, and they're not getting rid of Gadot for Wonder Woman.
Yep.
But there's a continuity there. Now it seems like, well, we can almost find anybody. It's like you don't have enough faith in the character that you're hiring actors and hope that the actor is going to garner attention. And, I mean, Jared Leto played Batman. Obviously, we can't get Heath Ledger back, but I'm not even sure he'd be up for, unless Nolan was doing this, like a standalone Joker. You just have, where is the congruency? And you need that if you're going, because then what's going to happen? So you have a standalone Joker movie, and then if you make another movie like Suicide Squad 3, who's going to be in it? Like, or am I supposed to believe that Joaquin Phoenix is younger than Jared Leto?
Do you know what I think? I absolutely agree with you. I think you have to have this continuity and this congruency through the universe. However, I think also Warner's biggest problem is the fact with the DC stuff is sometimes it's going down a road that it knows is not the right road to be going down. So what do you just keep going down that road with, you know, bits of the car not working? Or do you switch out the parts and get parts that actually might make it work? And the comic book universe, there are so many comic book storylines available where you can recast. You can take it down a different line. You can have paradoxes. You can have crossovers. You can do whatever you want. I mean, there are franchises that have had to recast through deaths.
Right.
And it's been fine.
Sure.
I think you can recast. There are several characters in franchises. Great example, James Bond.
Yeah, but James Bond.
Couple of movies, and then you have a different person playing that actor.
But that's because of mostly age. There's only one actor,
I was going to say as well,
who played James Bond, and he only did it once, and that was because of the actor, because of reception.
Yeah.
Connery ended up coming back. Even Timothy Dalton got through at least two Bond movies.
And age is a good point, because
they get older, and it's time. They notice.
Which means nature is going to push recasting at some point
anyway.
And we
know Marvel, if they're going to continue that, at some point they're going to, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is going to hang up his helmet.
We all know that as well as Disney paying off people like ourselves to say that Marvel movies are great, they're also injecting the cast of these films with the water from the Fountain of Youth.
Correct.
To stop them aging.
Right.
So they won't ever have to know. Yeah. They're not. That is not true.
Well, and going
that
back,
was a joke.
You made a very valid point too about DC. I thought, they just restructured a lot of going on there.
Yep.
So I figured that they were going to have a plan going forward. And again, why are we going to focus on the villains?
Mm.
We should make our superheroes a lot stronger. Like, take the Wonder Woman movie and then just go forward and start making a Superman, a Batman movie. You know, I know that we're getting an Aquaman movie and eventually a Flash movie, but they did it ass backwards.
Yep.
You know, it was reverse engineering where they gave us the shitty Justice League, and at the end of that movie,
was that the full title?
Care.
Shitty Justice League.
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. That's a Paradox universe.
A lot of people talking about this could get messy. Zeno Hour is saying, as far as Joaquin Phoenix playing Joker, Zeno Hour is not holding their breath. JP was supposed to play Doctor Strange and Lex in Batman vs Superman. Ultimately, he's turned down these roles. Yes. Ultimately, he has turned down these roles, but sometimes there are a number of factors in that. Sometimes they decide they don't want to do it. Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's scheduled, that kind of thing as well. So, yes, he has absolutely correctly turned down a number of those roles in the past. I think many actors, sometimes it's money because they want to raise their profile, or sometimes it's a perfect fit for them. They do take these roles.
Absolutely.
So I would, yes, your point is valid, but I would not be surprised at all if there are some changes in there. I think it's very interesting. I would be very interested to see Joaquin do it, and I think he would bring the right level of unhinged to that role.
Sure.
That would be in line with sort of previous interpretations that we've seen. I mean, personally, I enjoyed Leto's Joker.
Yeah, he's okay.
I think many of the interpretations of the character that we've seen come to the big screen and the small screen over the years have been very different and very interesting.
Absolutely.
I would have liked it. It turned out, you know, recently that Heath Ledger had actually apparently been looking to return as the Joker, had that been the case, and obviously had he not unfortunately passed. I would have been up for seeing more of him.
Yeah.
But I'd certainly be interested in Joaquin. And the whole wider recasting in the DCU is a really interesting topic, which we'll, go back to, excuse me, at many points in the future. Now, something else that was a huge part of my childhood, and your childhood as well, you know, aside from comic book movies, was Masters of the Universe.
Yes.
Now, as terrible as it is, I actually really enjoyed the Masters of the Universe. Dolph Lundgren, Courtney Cox. Yeah, it is not often that Courtney Cox gets second billing for that movie. Right. There has been talk about this for many, many years, as there has been Thundercats as well, which has never happened, and there are various fan-made trailers online. David S. Goyer was going to be directing this. Mm-hmm. He's now exited this in the very recent past. I would have been interested to see what he could have done with it. He wasn't my first choice for a director, but Hollywood doesn't check these things with me. Big question. Do you think we need a Masters of the Universe movie? And do you think audiences will engage with a Masters of the Universe movie? When we go back to these things that are heritage or retro or childhood, sometimes audiences connect and sometimes they don't. A great case in point of it not is Power Rangers last year.
Power Rangers did okay. It did far better than I thought it was going to do.
Yeah.
Okay, and that would be my only argument and for why He-Man and Masters of the Universe could potentially go forward. Who's supposed to distribute that movie? Do we know?
I honestly think it was either Paramount or Warner Brothers. Can't remember.
So, but I might be wrong. Is there room for it? I mean, it's a slippery slope because the first Michael Bay produced Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did really well. The second one, not so much.
Yep.
Power Rangers did okay. I think Lionsgate was happy with the numbers, and I believe it did decent internationally.
Yep.
So, you know, if you can keep a good budget, the thing is, they would have to focus on making one good movie. Mm. You know, right now, I'm sure they're thinking, oh, we can make 5-6 He-Man movies. Make one.
And I think they wouldn't bother making one if they weren't looking to make at least, say, 3.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but I think with the science fiction fantasy element, don't make it like that version that came out, what was that, in the 80s, 90s? There's room for it. I'm sure some people, with the right marketing, you can get in the nostalgia, the new toys and kids, and you might have a hit like that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the first one.
Mm.
And then you go from there.
Well, you talk about the toys. It's really interesting, actually. There's a documentary on Netflix. There's a series of documentaries about toys.
Yes.
Toys That Made Us?
Yeah.
And there's one on He-Man. And it's. I mean, I could have watched it being twice the length, to be honest with you. I thought those were really, really well-made little documentaries. And it was talking about when they've tried to relaunch He-Man several times and release figures and tried to create new universes, and audiences just haven't gone for it. It'll be interesting to see whether, I mean, I genuinely take delight from kids being into Star Wars and seeing Star Wars t-shirts, and that has never really died.
Right.
It's some of the different properties, different IPs have got that kind of, the kids don't watch it, the kids don't engage with it, but they'll have it on a t-shirt in kind of an ironic kind of way. I think currently He-Man is kind of around there.
And you know who would make it succeed, though? He-Man, The Rock. I mean, The Rock's in everything.
I think I would be torn between going for people that were unknown and people that were really well known. But also, I mean, you talk about The Rock, not a ridiculous, I think it would have to be someone that looked a bit more like Prince Adam. So I think there are other people that I think we could consider for that. Not that I'm making... I'm not involved in the creative process at all.
You should be He-Man.
Jesus Christ, can you imagine?
I can.
That would be awful.
That would be
Orko,
great.
Maybe. And if you have a He-Man movie, you have to bring Orko back. Because that was an absolute tragedy that it wasn't in.
Absolutely.
He wasn't in the other one. Okay, a couple of people in the chat talking about this. Dino is saying, thanks for joining us, Dean. Black Panther will help He-Man get made, mixing fantasy with sci-fi. A really good point. Film nerd Jamie saying, if we're going to do He-Man, go with someone who is young and hungry to studio blockbusters. An outside-the-box choice. Goya was a stale choice. 100% agree with that. A lot of good young, in the terms of new talent,
sure.
That would be great for this. And I think a really good example of that is someone who was not young but had been waiting for the right project for a while is Patty with Wonder Woman. You know, when they brought her in, that was someone you would not associate with something like this. I think that kind of line of, not her, but I think someone going down that line of things
would
be good.
You gotta go out of the box, and hell, why not give it to a woman director?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, like, why not?
And Zeno then goes on to say, there's already a good He-Man movie, it's called Thor Ragnarok, which, you know, is a bloody good point.
That is a really good point.
That is true. But yeah, I mean, I would certainly be very interested to see, you know, what they could do with that. I loved He-Man growing up, and I still regularly revisit the cartoons.
The movies,
I love them.
The movie has been on various cable movie channels within the past couple of months.
Yeah.
So, and I always will stop.
It's good fun. You know what? It's terrible, but it's also good fun.
It really is.
Talking about terrible but not good fun, let's move on to, let's go back to Sunday. So people are watching the Super Bowl. Everybody's wondering if there's going to be, and we discussed this on the show last Friday, everyone's going to wonder if there's going to be an advert perhaps for Cloverfield 3. Doesn't have a title at this point. It turns up. Not only does it give us the title and the trailer, it also tells us that that movie is going to be available straight after the game on Netflix. A lot of people discussing whether there was going to be, it was going to go theatrical, whether it's going to Netflix. We found out early on Sunday night. Now, I was one of those people who couldn't, you can check from my tweets, that I was very excited about this. I really enjoyed the first two movies. In fact, the first Cloverfield movie was the first film that I ever had my name on a national ad campaign for.
Nice.
10 years ago.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the director and JJ personally had to clear all quotes for that film, rather than it just being the marketing team. So I was particularly proud of that. But let's go back to 2018. Let's come back here. So, end of the game. Brilliant. Press play on Netflix. Did not like it.
Yeah, I can't.
Was not terrible.
I thought it was.
It was just a trail of missed opportunities, poorly executed ideas, and great actors in roles with playing characters I didn't care about.
Absolutely.
So
that I don't disagree with, but I thought it was even worse than what you did. And what you thought about it. The thing is, Cloverfield for me was a movie. The first one took me by surprise because I thought they used the found footage concept, but they did it in a smart way. Having the name, you know, having a character named Hud, you know, who's documenting everything. But I thought, I actually was drawn into the movie, and I cared for characters. So when certain characters died, I was like, oh, that's a bummer. And then it ends. Now, 10 Cloverfield Lane, good God. I mean, they couldn't have gone more, like, they take it completely out of this quote-unquote monster movie. And I think even the tagline, you know, we don't know who the real monsters are. So it was something like that. My favorite, who I continue to crush on, Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Amazing.
John Goodman. I forget the third gentleman. It's a locked door thriller.
It's like a theatrical play in a very limited space.
And it plays almost like a Twilight Zone movie.
Which totally contradicted the original film, which was about scape and scale and endless boundaries.
Yeah, and this movie built tension, suspense, had a good twist at the end. And I'm like, 10 Cloverfield Lane's one of the most underappreciated. It's a really good movie. Done for, mind you, $15 million was the budget for this movie, right?
Yep.
So there was talk at Sundance regarding this Netflix deal, and it was sort of a secret, but not a secret, that Netflix was going to buy this Cloverfield sequel from Paramount, and then we see the... You know, we see the ad, and by name alone and by actors who are in it, I too clicked it on, and I thought it was just awful. The only questions it answered for me were, is like, oh, Thing from the Addams Family is continuing to get work. And even at that, I'm like going, really? An arm that's walking around and we're making...
It was a horribly wasted opportunity with that one mechanic on its own.
There's that. There's the... I mean, where do I go? There's the female lead who was good, but, you know, they're in this...
Gugu and Bartarul.
We're in this paradox universe and, oh, I have a family. I'm going to stay here. Really? That's your choice? You're not going to go back to and start your... There was no rhyme or reason for how characters made decisions. And just because Daniel Brühl seemed to be German, you know, he's automatically a bad guy. It was just so... They were literally lost in space.
Yeah.
And I saw Alien in there. I saw a little bit of Event Horizon.
Event Horizon, which is a much maligned and sadly overlooked movie, but is a brilliant sci-fi movie. I saw so many things in that. For something that, from a franchise that has been so, okay, it has elements of classic tropes, but it has been very refreshingly original. However, this felt like something that was 80%, 90% derivative. 10% creativity.
I agreed, and it was a story that I didn't care about.
I didn't care. I was waiting. It was also for something that is remarkably tense as a situation, and there's a clock ticking, and you've got lives at stake, and there's all sorts of really weird things. I didn't get any real tension or drama. It just wasn't... At times, some of the scenes felt for me like they were first or second read-throughs. And they were like, cut, great, yeah, stick it, great, let's take that. And it just, it didn't have the dramatic, there was no rise and fall.
Yeah.
There was no change in tone. And the exciting moments that there were so few and far between and so disjointed from everything else. Rather than having the shock value, it was like... What?
Well,
it just didn't fit.
It doesn't
kind of like the paradox in the galaxy where everything's kind of fucked up. It kind of felt like that.
It did. And again, 10 Cloverfield Lane does this brilliant job of, wait, is this supposed to be a Cloverfield movie? Like, and you get so...
It's like it wasn't an afterthought. It was retrofitted.
It was retrofitted, but it was in this universe. But you don't find out it's in this universe until the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
Clover, and that was one of its twists, and that's one of the brilliant things that movie hinges on. Because it's all about trying to escape this madman in a bunker. But is he really mad? And there were times I'm watching that movie, and I'm thinking, is he mad? Or if we are in Cloverfield, it had me guessing. This movie, I knew right from the beginning, and it did not shy away from which universe it's in, because we kept on going back to today's or to present Earth, where the monsters were doing what they were doing. So there was no twist at the end. There was no big deal at the end. And
there was no Planet of the Apes. When they kind of... And that's not the only movie to do. Life, for me, last year... was better
was
and gave
movie.
A much better movie in general and a much better ending with a not too different kind of ballpark finale. This just
didn't work.
Didn't work.
But are we going to talk about this from a business side?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Because this is what I found the most interesting about Cloverfield Paradox, right? So you're a movie fan. You read reviews. You read articles because your love of movies. So you've heard about studios dumping movies, right? Yep. And by that, and this is just age old. This has been going on forever. There are certain times of the year where moviegoers are they've got other things going on. And that's usually right after the holidays. So January, February, parts of March. It usually starts at Labor Day.
Yep.
And then you go into September and right into October, right? So sometimes a studio will put a weaker movie onto that slot. Sometimes they catch on. Sometimes you get a sleeper, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So they're not all crappy movies. But now with Netflix, Netflix paid $50 million to acquire this Cloverfield Paradox, which was to go theatrical. That was the original intent. So think about this. Coming from a distribution background, well, now the studio, Paramount, doesn't have to spend any money on publicity, advertising, or hard drives, right? They don't have to take the risk. They've just negated all of their distribution risk. Because if that movie went out, well, we saw the reviews on Netflix. If that was theatrical, I can't see it being any higher of a percentage, perhaps even lower, because it's theatrical. Paramount just made $50 million to cut essentially a distribution deal, but a distribution deal with Netflix. And then what happens? Well, we're talking about it. We've seen the movie. Whether we like it or not, it got hits. So it's getting seen probably by a hell of a lot more people than would have seen the movie had it gone theatrically. Yeah. Now, Netflix is in a position where, the way I view Netflix is they're trying so hard to get into this theatrical game.
Yeah.
My only problem with Netflix is that they just aren't playing by the quote-unquote rules in order to do it. The other thing you got to do is you have to have an acquisitions team that is picking theatrical quality movies. I was not a fan of Bright whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what Netflix says. Yes, they had a ton of viewers, and they can post as much as they want about oh, no, the viewers love Bright. Nah, I can't buy that. It was not a good movie. And definitely, if you watch it and you start to imagine how this would have looked on a big screen, it would have looked like garbage.
Yeah.
This Cloverfield was not a good movie, okay? But for Netflix, it's perfect.
It's interesting. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's interesting when you say you thought it would have been garbage on the big screen. I would have been very... And if Netflix decided that they want to do this, if they wanted to put it on a big screen, even just for sort of people in the industry, I'd be very interested to see it. To see if a lot of us have, you know, decent TVs at home, we have good sound systems, soundbars, whatever. But I think seeing it in a theatre environment on a bigger screen, it always gives it something different. Whether you're watching fucking Peter Rabbit or whatever, you know, it's always the experience you get watching it with an audience. It's going to be something slightly different.
It can be.
I would be interested to see if that is the case with this. I was watching this on my own. My wife was, you know, cooking and popping in to see, you know, every now and again whether it was any good. And I was like, still not very good. I'm just wondering if I watch that with other people on a big screen with that better sound, if that would change my opinion.
I don't think it would for me because it looks...
I don't think it would. That's another thing.
And that's a thing.
There were some moments I think actually played better on the small screen. Like,
yes.
There was some nice little use of special effects.
Yeah.
Which were great on TV. I think blown up on a big screen might have turned out to be another negative.
Yeah, and I'm going to use two examples. Look at Bright, for example. Okay, on Netflix, Bright does look good.
Yep.
But I'm thinking to myself, oof, on an XD IMAX kind of a screen, oof, that's going to look cheap.
Mm.
And it's going to piss people off.
Yeah.
For Netflix, then
and more pissed off because they paid $15 to see it.
Exactly. Now let's take a fan favorite show. Let's take Game of Thrones, which is clearly filmed almost like theatrically, right?
Yep.
But it's filmed for TV. If you were to take what they film and blow it up on a big screen, I'm not saying the quality of the storytelling is going to dump, but you're going to find the flaws in the special effects and you're going to say, okay, they're not, like, they look great on my 70-inch, you know, high def TV.
Yeah.
But on a big screen, it's just not going to look as good. You need to film it differently. Is your cinematography, your special effects. You need to widen the line, the landscape, the sets. It's got to be filmed theatrically. And Netflix is so trying hard to get into that. Number one, they should just play by the window rules. And if you've got money, you've got a ton of money, you can put budget. You could have tried to make Bright and have it go theatrical, but just take the care to get it done right for the theatrical, and who knows what's going to happen. Look what Amazon is doing. They're not putting out any special effects kind of movies. They're putting out
dramas.
Dramas. They're putting out some dramas.
Can I have some meowness on my sandwich before I watch my drama on television?
It's from Monica. They're succeeding. Yeah. You know, that's why A24 succeeds when you look at a movie like Ex Machina, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Has limited special effects, but they work. And you watch it and you go, that looks like a movie.
I want to move on, but one thing I want to talk about beforehand, you're talking about the marketing and the fact that there was no, you know, they hadn't spent the money in the marketing. And the Cloverfield films are, you know, well known for this. They bring the marketing late. It's often, you know, sort of guerrilla marketing. It's untagged. You're kind of working out what it is. And a lot of people were talking, and I was one of them, and you're probably very much the same, going into this. Well, like, they're changing the face of how things are done. You know, whether it's selling it to Netflix or with the advertising, it's changing the way the machine, this industry is broken. But I'm like, yes, it is changing the way that these films are marketed, but it's also more like films used to be marketed, as you touched on,
right,
where you don't put a trailer out 3 months, 12 months, 9 months, a year, 18 months ahead of schedule. It is that, like, 3 months wall. Boom, 3 months, we've got a film coming out in June,
right.
We start the trailers in March. Mm-hmm. And obviously now we have the internet, so you're going to have them on the internet as well. But the only place you'd see that trailer until, like, a week before the movie came out, or 2 weeks, when you'd see, like, TV cutdowns,
was
in the movie theater.
Yeah.
So films didn't burn. They still had anticipation. Box office was still huge.
Absolutely.
It's kind of, to me, it's a kind of an element where, and I've said this on the show before, I think sometimes we have too much too soon for too long.
Yes.
And it's kind of like if, you know, you have to have a little bit of a tease, a little bit of a reveal.
You do.
But if you tease for 9 months or a year, you get over familiar. I now disengage with content, and I'm not the only one, about a month before a movie comes out. I stop watching trailers. So when I watch Black Panther, I'm not so sick of those amazing action sequences that they lose their awe and impact on me. And that's not the only film, obviously, but
I agree. Sometimes I think there is too much. Like, I don't stop watching, say, the trailers per se, but I start watching all that other stuff that gets put onto the internet, behind the scenes, this. I don't want to know anything about the movie. A trailer is meant to tease me and give me this much information. That is good. But don't start putting all the other stuff online. But we also have to think, when it comes to Cloverfield Paradox, too, we have to think about our friends at Paramount. They now, too, are in a big shift. They've just had a big studio change, who's running the studio. And so they are in this midst where, for them, a movie like Cloverfield Paradox, they may have released about a year ago. But now they're like, okay, we have to be smarter than this. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to come up with a trailer. They don't have to worry about posters or outdoor campaigning. They don't have to worry about getting step and repeats with their actors. They've saved a boatload of money on doing this. And Cloverfield has, like, built a name for itself within the first two movies, right? I think this movie did more damage to the Cloverfield name. However, I understand as a business deal why Paramount did it.
100%.
And I think other studios, if you have a franchise, A, protect the franchise.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't do anything to protect the franchise. But if you have that movie that you really don't think is good, you should test it, get it out there. But if there's a deal to be made, I think studios may follow that lead and say, well, we'll at least make some money off it.
Yeah.
$50 million is better than having to be at risk and lose $50 million. Because I'm like, I couldn't believe Netflix paid $50 million.
No, but I mean, you know, I don't see if you took into marketing costs, et cetera, and promotional costs afterwards, I don't think that Paramount would have got a huge amount different to that back to put in their pocket at all. Cloverfield 4, though, apparently has been already done, shot, made, put in the can. It's all ready to go. That is going to go theatrical. That in the changing the way that films are marketed and released, this is probably the biggest difference, where you have a sequel that goes, or part of the franchise, part of the world, that goes to streaming, VOD, and then goes back into theatres. Because previously, that's been an end of life.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's been a slow release, a slow death.
Yeah.
This is going to be, some are going to be theatrical, some are going to be non-theatrical. That in itself, I think, is more of a shift for the industry.
Sure.
Than some other aspects
of
it.
And I think TV, well, movies have proven this, that movies and television can coexist. When the television was first invented, everybody thought, movies are going to die.
Well, if you worked in TV or your film went to TV, it was shit. If it went to VOD, it was shit.
Right.
And it wasn't good enough for theaters. And this is changing.
Yeah,
this is changing.
Is.
And I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of stuff I've seen VOD that is better than a lot of stuff I've seen in theatres.
Yeah, it can be.
Okay, so we're in the Super Bowl, or American Soccer Bowl, as I like to call it. Very glad that the Eagles...
Easy.
Eagles won. Hey, well done.
Simmered down. I'm from Boston.
They are my... they were the underdogs. I like to support an underdog.
Are you from Philadelphia?
No, I have never been. I've seen Rocky. and I like Philly cheesesteak sandwiches.
Well, I do too.
And, in West Philadelphia, I was not born and raised, and the playground is not where I spent most of my days. But no, I want to go there. But congratulations to the Eagles. They're certainly milking it this week.
As they should. Listen, I said this, I tweeted it out. As a Boston sports fan, I know what a drought is, okay? And yes, you could say, I'm greedy. Well, look, Philadelphia, you'll never get tired of losing. It'll never become losing will never become boring.
Yeah.
But our winning will never become winning will never become boring, but your first win, you're going to savor for the rest of your life. So when the Red Sox won in 2004 and the Patriots won their first Super Bowl in my lifetime, those wins were spectacular for me. And then if the Eagles continue to win, you're not going to say, oh, I don't want them to win anymore. Mm. Of course, you want your team to win. So for that, I say savor that win. You had this marvelous parade. You're in a high that... your city is going to carry with them well into the next season of football and baseball and every other sport. And Philadelphia is a sports town. They represent each of the main sporting events, football, baseball, hockey, basketball. So enjoy it. You're going to love it. Savor it. And trust me, like if and when you win again, that win's going to feel great too, but it's not going to be like what it is this time around. So all I can tell Philadelphia fans is savor it. It's going to stay with you. Enjoy it.
Yeah, no, 100%. Let's talk about, there were a lot of trailers. We've talked lengthily about Cloverfield, but there's a lot of trailers that dropped within the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
So let's run through them pretty quickly. A Quiet Place.
Interesting movie.
Yeah.
It looks like it could be okay.
It's I think it's opening South by Southwest.
Yes.
I think it's opening or closing. Opening. Very excited. I genuinely really like the look of this. It's going to take something that I think is a trope from horror and extending it and making it totes trope.
Yeah.
and then I think it'll be interesting to play with that and see if it doesn't get dull. That's the thing. Because we'll have to see.
If the trailer can make it tense, it's a tense trailer. It's a good trailer.
It's a very good trailer.
I don't know. I mean, I too have good hopes for this movie. I like the two leads too. I know the husband and wife, but Krasinski and Emily Blunt have screen presence, but with the kids and the setting that they build this up upon, it looks like the writers may have taken their clever steps to say why we're here. What are the rules to this universe? And of course, it all goes to shit, and I want to see how that all happens.
Everybody wants to see it go to shit.
Yeah.
But no, I'm genuinely, I think the biggest hurdle for this is the fact that when you have a movie that is about silence, how you can sustain tension.
Sure. Sure.
You can also lose tension because there's nothing to drive it, and that's going to be quite difficult. But I'm very optimistic about this.
Yeah, me too.
What I'm not optimistic about is finding a movie theater where I can watch it where everybody will shut the fuck up. Just saying. That is going to be difficult. But still, I'm going to give it a go. I'm looking forward to that. Avengers Infinity War.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's more of the same.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. Black Panther has, as much as I love the Avengers movies, that delivered more for me than some of those have. But I'm definitely very much looking forward to this. And especially because it's like a bookend.
Yeah.
I want to see where this is going
to
go.
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't looking forward to this new Avengers movie.
Look, it's more of the same, but
Marvel,
it's a hamburger.
Marvel has done such an amazing job with these characters that you've come to grow and love them, and they've just put in just the right amount of humor. You know, now that you have these new characters like Black Panther and such, then you know, in the trailer, it's a great line when Black Panther says, and someone get this man a shield, right? More of the same. There could potentially be some very high stakes. We could be losing some beloved characters, but it's been how the trailer has been putting everything together. That, like, when you think about how many characters there are, it's like, and they're able to put it into a trailer that we even see the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
You're like, they're just
Which,
going for broke.
As but much I, as I'm like looking it. Forward to it, because I, like you, love many of these characters. I think they've done really, really good jobs with them. And I think we are going to, unfortunately, some of them are going to be going off either permanently or certainly for a while. My concern is the fact that there are now so many people within this. Mm-hmm. And there has to be, because it's basically a big epic, you know, face-off, that some of those characters won't get a fair shout. I might feel a little bit wasted or marginalized, and that is a shame because there are so many strong characters, and it has happened before. I've talked regularly about Hawkeye, Black Widow, often feeling, even when they get their own stories, it's like, don't care about you enough to want to go on that journey, and when you're there, you don't really do enough to kind of excite them. I like the characters,
but
I want more from
this
them.
This is two movies.
It is.
So, you know, it's
there's
like,
going to be a lot to take in.
There will be a lot to take in, but I trust the directors and the, you know, I think it looks good to me. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm really pleased to see The Rock getting some work.
Oh yeah, I know. I mean,
because
he was
I do worry.
I
do worry about him that he's not getting enough of the bite of the cherry in Hollywood.
I told you, the next time you interview him, you have to ask the question, what do you say no to?
Yeah.
That's the list that I want to know.
Yeah.
Well,
he didn't say no to Skyscraper.
No.
Which, I mean, it looks as dumb as a bag of rocks.
Come on, it's the Towering Inferno.
It is Towering Inferno, with a bit of Die Hard.
Yeah, I'm all
and,
in.
And a bit less leg. This looks like San Andreas for me. That was not a great movie. I had so much fun with that film, though.
Same here.
It is just as dumb as a box of frogs. But I'm really psyched about Skyscraper.
I'm looking forward to
Popcorn movies!
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Skyscraper.
Yeah.
When Towering Inferno meets Die Hard, well, what else do I need?
I don't even care what the story is.
Yeah,
I don't care that much.
And again, San Andreas at least pleasantly surprised me because that director, you know, he threw some things in that I was like, whoa, holy cow, I didn't see that coming. Like, there were these pleasant little visual surprises that happened. And I'll put it to you this way. I'm looking more forward to Skyscraper than I am Rampage.
Yeah.
Skyscraper.
I'm looking forward to Rampage, but Skyscraper to me seems like it could be a
decent disaster movie.
Zeno Hour in the chat agrees. Says, I'm sorry, Skyscraper looks fun. No need to apologize.
No, don't apologize.
No need to apologize.
I agree too.
It does look fun.
It does.
We're going to get to some fun Dwayne stuff in a second as well. And Sky Patterson is saying, Sky wonders what the official runtime of Avengers Infinity War is. Is it 140 minutes, 150 minutes, 170 minutes, 180 minutes? Same for Avengers 4. I don't know. I think they won't go too overlong because I want to make sure they've got enough to fill it out, but we don't know just yet. Red Sparrow, Sky also talks about. We're just going to talk about the trailers for the Super Bowl at the moment. We'll get to that later. But yeah, Red Sparrow does look good. I'm seeing that next Friday, I think. Okay,
let's, for you.
Let's look at Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. We saw a longer, bigger, more full trailer for this. I know a lot of people that didn't like Jurassic World. I had a lot of fun with that. I did enjoy it. I am very much looking forward to Fallen Kingdom. Not because of what I've seen, but because I'm wondering what they're not showing. I'm impressed by what we're seeing. I just want to see what else there is. It looks interesting. It looks darker. There's still the comedy there, mm-hmm. but it looks a little bit more...
Yeah, I mean, okay, going into it, Jurassic Park is near and dear to my heart. I worked with the first one when I was at Universal doing 25 marketing.
25 years ago that came out.
Doing in theater marketing and such for it, so it's near and dear to my heart. This one, they could have called it Jurassic World Little Boy Blue, because, if they're going to build on this blue relationship... I don't know. I get you. We're going to try to get the dinosaurs off the island, seems to be the plot. Mm. But we don't know enough of the plot. One thing I hope they've done, because one of the negatives of the first Jurassic World is, militarizing, weaponizing raptors and the dinosaurs. That plot was, silly to me. This one, I don't know. It can go either way. But already we're starting off with the cliche couple that they were... They were almost a couple, then they became a couple in the first movie, and now they're apart, they're still arguing, but they're going to get back together again, it seems. It's like, why can't you just be a couple?
Why can't you just argue?
You don't have to build sexual tension in a Jurassic World movie.
Sexual tension.
And how many memes are we going to get of
plenty.
Chris Pratt's doing this?
Never too many.
It's Jurassic World... I'm in. We'll see what they do. It'll be fun.
No, it's people saying that... we'll go to the comments in a minute. I want to get through these. Deadpool 2 we also saw this week. Let's go Mission Impossible Fallout first of all,
yes.
Actually.
Can we? Because I love that.
I want to talk about that. I'm a big fan of... Everybody watches the show on a regular basis. Big fan of Tom Cruise. I love the Mission Impossible franchise. It's had ups and downs, but I do love it. This trailer... is so on the money for me.
Agreed.
And I think Paramount, it's amazing. Paramount, obviously, who originally created the Cloverfield movie, they had two trailers in there. This one is the one that they're going, oh, thank fuck everybody likes it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this just...
It looks great.
It does look
it
really...
It looks like a ton of fun. Yeah. Right? The last one was really solid, and Paramount's already doing, they learned this valuable lesson when they had the one, and I think it could have been the last one, where Tom Cruise is hanging outside of a plane, right?
Of course he does!
I remember in CinemaCon, this was a big deal, and it was the first time that they bring Tom Cruise out in Vegas, in the Celine Dion theater, right? And he talked about this scene and how he is actually hanging from a plane. And you're like, wow, holy cow. That's crazy, right? And so he does his own stunts, and already Paramount has released Tom Cruise is flying his own helicopters through canyons, and he went through pilot school. And so they're already getting that. They're already following the footsteps of their previous marketing. Listen, when you have him hanging from a plane, a cliff, or a helicopter, and he's running, and he has that great team, Ving Rhames, and Simon Pegg with him, you can't lose. You have to make a really shitty movie for me to say, that was a really shitty movie. I don't think it's going to happen here. I think it's going to be fun.
Bearing in mind how much Tom Cruise actually does, being Tom Cruise's assistant must be the quietest job in the world. No, fuck it, I'll do it myself.
But his assistant is actually doubles as an insurance agent.
That is true. That is true. Fundamentally, I think, be following him around with a very soft cushion. Just so...
sign here,
to help.
Please.
Yes,
hey,
do this.
Tom, can you sign this?
Okay, Solo. We saw the tease for Solo. Yep. And then we saw the full trailer that dropped on Monday. I love Star Wars. I wouldn't consider myself to be a diehard Star Wars fan. This so far has excited me. When I heard it was being made, I was really looking forward to it. The more I see of it, I'm not massively excited about this.
It's all about...
Well, that said, I will go and see it.
I will go and see it.
My money's already there.
Yep, I'm going to go see it. I'll be right there with you. The actor's going to have to... I mean, he's going to have to prove to audiences, not just to me, but to audiences. Who cares about whether he proves himself to me that he can handle the role?
Yeah.
My one thing about Star Wars and everything that's going on around it is this. Growing up with Star Wars, and literally growing up with Star Wars, there was an excitement to a release of a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Particularly after the first one. So when Empire Strikes Back comes out, Return of the Jedi comes, mm-hmm. there was an excitement about it built in. Like, you just couldn't wait to go see it, right? And then, you know, the prequels happened, and whether you love or didn't love them, there was still an excitement built around going to see that. And there's a reason why The Force Awakens did the money, because, again, you were getting them every 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
But now we're getting a Star Wars movie every year, and it's becoming less special. And I understand it's Disney, Lucasfilms. There's a whole new generation that you're going to be introducing this universe to, right? Yep. But for me, the releases are becoming like the Marvel release. They're becoming less special.
There's a lot
of them.
I'm
going to go see them. And they just announced that the people from Game of Thrones are going to be making 3 movies.
Yep.
That Rian Johnson's going to be making 3 movies. And we've got Solo. We're going to have Calrissian. We're going to have Boba Fett. Okay.
I'm still waiting for the Jawa road trip movie. The Jawa hangover or something. Where a load of Jawas take a land speeder and go and get fucked up somewhere.
Poodoo.
Houdini.
Jamin Taka. So, a Star Wars fan.
I would watch that,
they're
by the
not,
way.
Me too. Yeah. They're not special anymore.
Yeah.
So that anticipation level, I've had this conversation too about the merchandise. Mm. Like, they so flooded the market with Force Awakens that there's not really anything new out there that I've got to have. Albeit, you know, with that said, Sideshow Collectibles has had some amazing, like, I have an amazing Rey and this Ralph McQuarrie Darth Vader sitting on a shelf. But again, the specialness of what, or the uniqueness of what made Star Wars, like, you anticipated every single movie.
I would be fine with one every 2 years, and I go and see all of them. So it's not like I'm part of the problem. Mm-hmm. I'm not part of the solution. I do enjoy them, but I do like you. I'm saying this to someone else myself. I do wish that they would just a year. I mean, people haven't stopped writing think pieces about The Last Jedi,
right?
I mean, that's almost, you know, we're over 2 months, almost 3 months now since that came out. Mm-hmm. And people started writing about it a long time before.
Yeah.
And we've now got another one coming in May. I'm just a little bit like, 1 year is more than close enough.
Right.
2 years for me would be great.
Good distance. And it gives you anticipation.
Or even do some and then put them on things like a Netflix or whatever. But just, you know, the constant stream of these things,
right.
I think, is... It's great as a revenue earner.
It's diluting the product.
But it dilutes, and I just think it ever so slightly devalues. Not monetary value.
No.
But you kind of, it does lose that thing.
Yeah. I will say this, though, as a Star Wars fan, if you watch the show Rebels, that show is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, just fantastic what they've done on that show. And I didn't think that, you know. Listen, Clone Wars is Clone Wars, and it was fine. But this show with these new characters, in which I honestly don't know. I mean, I can guess how it might end, or where some of them may end.
It never ends.
Man, but this show, if you're a Star Wars fan, check it out. Rebels is very good. I highly recommend. I know it's not theatrical, but we are talking Star Wars. It's a very cleverly written show.
Something else that dropped this week was the tease for Venom.
Yes.
Tom Hardy. I'm almost excited. I really like the look of it. And I'm almost there.
Yeah.
I mean, what about you?
I watched the trailer twice.
Okay.
And I said, "Meh, it's another Marvel movie. We're making a Marvel."
I like that it looks darker.
Yeah,
I do like that.
What I want to hold off 100%. I don't want to. I want to see this trailer on the big screen.
Yeah.
I want to see how it translates. Look, you know, I like Tom Hardy. I think Tom Hardy is a good choice. I didn't know Michelle Williams was in this.
Mm.
But again, you know, superhero movies are, I said this before, they should have their own genre. It should be their own genre and category. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, you know, because he's supposed to be a sort of kind of a villain to Spider-Man with this cosmic space, with this cosmic suit that he wears. It'll be interesting. I mean, I'm sure he's not going to be Venom that was in, which one was it? Was it the third one? Yeah, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 3. I'm sure this is going to be a much better version of Venom. And because it's Tom Hardy.
I did kind of like Topher as Venom.
He was okay.
Yeah. Not the worst superhero villain by any stretch.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see Tom Hardy's take.
Another superhero trailer that dropped this week. We saw the first looks really at Deadpool 2. Sure. Very much focusing on Cable. Yes. It was a Cable heavy. A lot of people refer to this, but kind of, you know, taking a little jab at the Henry Cavill Spider-Man special effects Star Show debacle.
Superman.
I love Deadpool.
Me too.
I'm with the Deadpool 2 campaign. I thought the campaign for Deadpool was so innovative. I think the fact that they're doing fundamentally a very similar thing, I'd like to see them be equally creative, but in a new way.
Okay, let me ask you in the audience this question, because this is what I've been noticing. Number one, we know that the original director was let go.
Yeah.
We know that Ryan there has a lot of pull now with this Deadpool, because the first one came out of nowhere.
Yep.
It was released on a Valentine's Day weekend. They didn't expect... Again, that's that sleeper hit that we're talking about, right? This one, to me, like the first one won because of its cleverness, right? Now it is almost becoming over the top, too much self-referential. And that, to me, could ruin it. Because now you're going to take... Yeah, you're going to be rated R, but your rated R-ness is going to come from your self-referentiality to make it rated R. Where the first one cleverly had great violence, great comedy, great characters, great fights. Now it almost seems like it could become a parody of itself.
And I think it didn't become a parody of itself, but I think I'm a bit concerned that it might follow the route for me of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, where that kind of seemed to, hey, what are our best bits? Let's replicate those and let's build those out and let's not worry too much about what's in between. For me, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 was paled in comparison to Guardians of the Galaxy, which was new, which people again didn't think was going to be quite the thing that it turned out to be. I thought the whole idea of that movie was a terrible idea. I was horribly wrong. And I'm just a little bit worried. Like, I mean, even though I'm very much looking forward to Deadpool 2, I am a little bit like, great, this is the same. But I think we also
learned... But even more.
But also I think we've learned sometimes that audiences can be quite funny, where it's like, for so many years, people were going, I want something new and different from Star Wars. And then when they got it, a lot of people were upset because they got something new and different in Star Wars. Yeah. So I don't think you can please everybody. Sometimes we want different, but we want the different to be very much the same. I like this. This didn't hit me in the same way that Deadpool, when that stuff started happening. It's feeling a little bit familiar for me. But that is a trademark of the character. So I kind of, if it wasn't there, then you'd be going, why have they changed?
I get it.
It's difficult.
And you go, wow, I've never seen them make fun of special effects before. Like, oh, we couldn't finish his arm. Well, go ahead, finish it. And they go back to the trailer. Okay, that's sort of clever.
I liked what they did.
I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm in.
100%. Now, we have a lot of other stuff to get through as well before we finish. But I want to go to my scoop.
Go, scoop away. I'll have a vanilla twist, please.
Yes. No, it was Tarantino. We know he's working on a couple of new projects at the moment, making the headlines for numerous reasons right now.
Star Trek.
Yes. Star Trek is one of them. But also the Manson Project.
Yes.
Now, I have been reliably informed that there are a number of very well-known people who have read for roles in this Manson movie. What roles they are, we do not know. But Chris Pine, Sean Penn, and Jude Law have apparently all read for roles in this. Now, whether they'll actually get involved, we don't know. How serious this is, we don't know. Very interesting cast.
Absolutely.
And very interesting cast. Might be for the same role, might be for different roles. We don't know.
And not it's not within his stable of stars.
People that he hasn't used before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Certainly
used Chris Penn's. He's used Sean Penn's brother before.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Absolutely.
But you're absolutely right. These three, I can't recall ever being in a Quentin Tarantino movie.
And it's something quite different for a lot of them. Certainly from what even some of them have done sort of harder roles previously. I mean, I thought Chris Pine was amazing in Hell or High Water.
Oh, fantastic.
But you usually associate him with something that is either lighter and fluffier or something like a Star Trek. Sean Penn, you do associate him mostly with dramatic roles, but
absolutely.
I think this could be very interesting for him. Jude Law has done action stuff, has done lighter stuff. This doing Tarantino, I think, will be quite...
And let us not forget, too...
Well, we don't know if he's doing it.
But Tarantino has actually... rejuvenated. Look what he did to Travolta's career.
Yep.
And even Sam Jackson, for that matter, right? So when he... And he surrounded him with his faves. And so when you're talking about this casting, you know, we don't... You know, it could jumpstart a Sean Penn career again.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jude Law...
As great as he is, needs it.
Right. I mean,
But also, it's last call for the Tarantino train.
True.
You know, I mean, this is reportedly, you know, people change their minds. He's entitled to do that. But this, at the moment, is the last toot of Tarantino's, mm-hmm. you know, big screen train. I mean,
absolutely.
He might move to TV. He might decide not to make anything else. If you want to get on board.
Yeah.
And you want to play in his sandpit.
Yep.
You need to do this.
I agree.
Because you won't get another chance, likely.
I agree.
So I think this is very interesting. And if this is some of the male characters mm-hmm. or the male actors they're looking at, I'd be very interesting to later look at who he'd be looking to come in and do some of the female roles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Someone who I'm really, really pleased is getting a lot of recognition at the moment. Oscar nominees, Frances McDormand.
Sure.
I would love to see her with Tarantino. And I watched I, Tonya last night. Alison Janney.
Sure.
Would be amazing. And I spoke to Willem Dafoe. I covered the Oscars luncheon this week, producing for Reuters.
Nice.
And Willem Dafoe hasn't worked with Tarantino.
Not that I'm aware of.
I would love to see him get on board this last thing.
Sure.
But we'll see. I mean, those are names I am just throwing out there.
Right.
That I do not know if they've even been in consideration. That is just my personal opinion. But they are three people that I would very much love to see.
Yeah, it would be interesting.
I'm seeing a lot of really nice, fresh, young cast coming through at the moment. There's a number of people in movies like Black Panther, where we saw Get Out and stuff like that, which are throwing up a lot of really good young... I mean, so many movies. Lady Bird is another one that we're, you know, we've seen a lot of very interesting... I mean, I would love to see maybe Greta Gerwig work with Tarantino. You know, put the director's hat off for maybe one more movie and go and do this.
Sure.
Would be really
Brie
cool.
Larson.
Or someone, Brie Larson would be great. I'd love to see someone who doesn't do this kind of thing. Maybe like a Melissa McCarthy style person.
Yep.
You know, come in and rather than doing the whole, ha-ha, this is what you expect of me, do something really... dark and different.
Sure.
I'm very excited about the serial killer movie Zac Efron's making right now.
Yeah.
You know, I've really been looking for him to do something dark and fucked up for quite a while. So I'm excited by this. But this, certainly, you know, if this is correct, that Chris Pine, Sean Penn, and Jude Law have read for parts in Tarantino's Manson movie. Yeah.
It's interesting. Absolutely.
Yeah, where do I buy my ticket?
It's good quality.
It's really, really good quality.
If they get whatever roles that they're reading for. Yeah. I have a scoop, too. Speaking of reading for Quentin Tarantino, I haven't read for any roles for Quentin Tarantino. So that's a scoop.
You heard it here first. Thank you. You're talking about quality. Cannot guarantee quality at this weekend's box office. Let's get to the three big movies that are coming out this week. We have... 50 Shades Freed, which is the final 50 Shades movie.
Free at last.
Oh my God. I think even fans of the franchise are happy for this to be over. Peter Rabbit and 1517 to Paris. Now I will get to those in turn. Let's look at 50 Shades Freed. Okay, this is looking for Thursday night previews, 5.6 million. If you compare that to the previous one, the last one was 50 Shades Darker, took 5.7, so this is down on that. and 50 Shades of Grey took 8.6 million on its Thursday. So this is considerably down from that first one and a little bit down from the last one. It's looking at a box office this weekend of 33 million. Darker was 46.6 million opening weekend. Grey was 85.2 million. This is considerably down on that. This was a franchise that there was there was a lot of bidding about who was going to make absolutely. This. The studios were fighting over each other to get this. That zeitgeist passed pretty much by the first time the first movie had hit theaters. And now Universal's been left holding this franchise and kind of popping it out, for the last couple of years. 2015, I think the first one came out. So that's with 3 years down, so it's one a year. I think this still has an audience that will go and see it, but I think there are a lot of people that are kind of done with this, or they might not rush to see it in theaters.
Exactly. I think there hasn't been a movie. The closest thing that I can compare the 50 Shades thing is like Sex and the City.
Yeah.
Right. The Sex and the City gave women, and it's great. I'm not knocking, but gave women the excuse to go to a movie, but. Prior to the movie, they had their, they had their cosmopolitans. It's a get together experience and to go to the movies. You're right. The first one did 80. I think women realized that as racy as the first one was, it's just not that good of a movie.
No.
And it really brought
it's
out
the
flaws.
It's not even that racy.
Right. But people also, it also showed that the books really maybe aren't that great either.
No, they are not.
So, the second one showed that fatigue. This one, don't forget, we're also going into the opening of the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So that could have some effect. You're saying women don't like watch, they don't. Figure skating builds an audience. The Olympics always build an audience, have an audience there. So, will they go out tonight? Tonight's the big night. If they go out in droves... But tonight's also
this whole weekend is going to be vitally important because next week Black Panther comes out.
Correct.
That's looking at opening at 150 million.
Absolutely.
Well, I think could even potentially do more, to be honest with you. We've started to see a couple of negative reviews, and I'll be talking about Black Panther on the show next week. You've had my thoughts last week, but obviously it hits next week. There will be the initial audience for this. I think a lot of people will be, if you pardon the phrase, holding off. until they can watch it elsewhere.
I agree.
And there's also just not a huge amount of excitement around it, unfortunately. Yeah. I feel bad for Universal on that front because they spent a lot of time. As someone was just saying in the chat, film nerd Jamie was saying the 50 Shades films cost so little that they're easy profitable as hell.
Absolutely.
No, absolutely right. So they're going to make money on these. But it's less money than they would have expected.
You're right.
And a lot less money than I think they would... expecting generally. It's not held the attention.
And they're not going to get that Valentine's Day bump that a movie of this ilk would normally get.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's 50 Shades Freed. Also coming out in theaters now, I reviewed the next two for IGN. The 1517 to Paris, Clint Eastwood's latest movie.
I've read your tweets and review. Actually.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Looking at a weekend of about 12 million, people were saying around the 10, it's looking now about 12. Not great. This film, as much as I love and respect Clint Eastwood as a filmmaker and as an actor, I don't agree with him politically, but that's fine. This is a terrible film. It is a terrible film by anyone's standards, and it is a terrible, terrible film by Clint Eastwood standards.
Which saddens me.
Which saddens me. I mean, this is not a film that I was particularly excited about anyway. I was not quite sure how they were going to make an entire film out of one very heroic incident.
Right.
What were they going to build around and how were they going to do it? I mean, from the moment the first frames hit the screen, this is a problem. The dialogue, the script is terrible. I mean, I can only imagine that there was a lot of improv here and not actually... Script.
Right.
Because this is just so painfully bad at places. There are 80% of this movie is small talk. You're getting somewhere to this event, And the road there is so poorly paved. And there are so many things wrong with it. It's uncomfortable. It's actually uncomfortable to watch.
Which shocked me most prior to the start of the show. You were talking to me about this, and I remember us seeing The Snowman, and that movie.
It's worse than The Snowman,
and that's what shocked me.
It's worse than The Snowman.
Pretty bad. Yeah. Is it worse than Mother?
I haven't seen Mother. I do limit myself on how many things I watch. But no, I mean, just for me, 15-17 to Paris. There are so many things wrong with this. I mean, obviously, you know, the decision was made to have the real guys star in this movie. They are not actors, and they cannot act. And if this is kind of, you know, an interpretation of a recreation, they seem so uncomfortable. The whole thing doesn't gel.
Right.
It just doesn't work. It's not even convincing as a, hey, here's kind of us just being guys. And considering they are friends with real chemistry, it feels like they are not friends with any chemistry, which is absolutely remarkable. And I can't imagine what it would be like to get, you've got to reenact your actual real friendship in front of a camera with all this crew and stuff. Oh, that's going to be weird. But this does not come across at all as convincing. There are so many things that are wrong with it. I mean, there's a creative decision where when they do sort of flashbacks to when they were kids in school,
right.
And the creative decision has been made for they picked sort of kids to play them, and yet not known kids. So it's not like you've got a load of famous children playing these guys. But then they've made the decision to have well-known actors to play their parents, the coach, the principal. So you've got this really weird world where you've got, it's a story of unknowns, casting unknowns. You've then got unknown children playing the children, and yet you have familiar faces playing these additional characters, which it just doesn't quite work. Why would you not go for... Sometimes it can work. Things like Florida Project, where you pick people who are not actors and they make a movie and they star in it and it's great. That can work. This is, why would you not cast those school teachers, etc., with people that you don't know? Why would you have, like...
And they're certainly not being advertised.
No, it's not. They're below the line. Right. It's really weird. It just doesn't work. I mean, there are so many moments in this. When they're in Germany, they're on a bike tour, and there's a discussion about where Hitler's bunker was, which in itself is fine. It's not particularly well handled. And then the guy who's leading the tour, when he's just going out of scene, he's singing or whistling Springtime for Hitler in Germany from the producers.
Of course.
And I'm like, what? What? There are so many things in this. I mean, at points, this to me, and this is in my review for IGN, it felt like it was Under Siege, like Clint Eastwood makes Under Siege mixed with Eurotrip. I expected Matt Damon to pop up at some point and sing Scotty Doesn't Know, or for Vinnie Jones to like try and open beer bottles with his eyes. It's for someone who is so accomplished and knows cinema so well.
This really feels
like something that's been made by someone who doesn't know film or how to make a movie. And he does. He's made some amazing movies.
Absolutely.
And the whole thing was just, it was, I was shaking my head, and it's not even a long movie. I was shaking my head. And then when you get to the end, it's kind of like we know all the backstory behind the heroes.
And we know that they have to live.
Or we know that they have to live.
Because they're acting in the movie.
And the scene involving, or the scenes, that final part involving the actual incident where they stop a terrorist attack is actually done pretty well. But you've spent 80%, 90% of a movie getting to there that is way... There's entire scenes where they're in, like, they're choosing their dinner, or they're talking about going for gelato, and then they go for gelato, and they're picking what gelato they want, and going, hey, there's chocolate, I might have chocolate, oh man, look, there's vanilla, hey, is your gelato good? Yeah, we are got the best gelato, great, I'm gonna have it, I'm like, well, who the fuck cares about gelato? As an aside, that's great. But I was watching it going like, am I high? It was just so bad. There's so much talk about nothing. It was just, it actually made me a little bit angry, but I'm going to calm down.
I'm actually
It's just such
gelato
a shame.
Right,
it's an amazing story told amazingly badly.
And see, you just heard it. It's an amazing story, folks. You love the movie.
Yeah, no, it is. But no, the story, but I'm kind of like, you've got all this backstory behind the heroes, and right. I'm kind of like, and then you have the terrorist, and there's nothing around him.
Right.
And I'm not, I don't want his life story.
Right.
But I want,
you don't know where,
because this was a real thing that happened. Mm-hmm. We know about this guy, some of his backstory, how he came to be there doing that. There's nothing right. about that in the movie.
Yeah, and just without having seen the movie, but I did see Sully, which also based
Sully
on
was
a
amazing.
Very, yes, which is based on a true incident.
Yeah, yeah.
And the build up to
I loved Sully.
The crash.
Yeah.
Or the landing in the water. Was done very, number one, it used flashback, but not in a cliche way at all. And it led up to the events of that crash landing in the water. And you're like going, wow, this is a good movie.
Mm.
Like, it was very well done. Great performances. This sounds like he tried to Sully-ize this event to an extent too.
Well, but. I mean, as I wrote in my IGN review, which I'll just go over what they are referred to by someone who responded who hadn't seen the movie, but obviously didn't think that my opinion, having seen the movie, was correct. Apparently, I'm shallow, inexperienced, a naive YouTuber, and a dumb millennial. but yeah, I mean, so this whole thing, I feel bad for the guys in it. I genuinely do. Yeah. I would have done, he gave us Sully, and I said in my review, you know, now he's given us Sullied, because what he's done is he's really... It's a bad telling of this amazing story about three heroes.
Yeah, and the using the actual people in a movie is not necessarily new. It was done in
or
a movie
not
called,
necessarily a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, it was done. I think the movie was called Seals or Seal Team that used the actual.
I remember
Navy
that.
Seals.
Yeah,
and you could tell that they weren't actors, but you had a really good editor. Half decent director.
Yeah.
They knew when to cut away. They knew how to shape the performance because they're not actors.
Mm.
And the movie is somewhat engaging. It wasn't miserable. It could have been a lot worse, and it sounds like
I feel bad for the guys in it because they are heroes.
Sure.
And they deserve better than this. I think it was to put them in this position. Is not great. It does not take away from their act at all. But this is just not a good telling of that story.
It's a shame,
and it is
a
shame
to hear, because you know you. I've never known of Clint Eastwood to make that bad of a movie.
It's just not. It's just not good. So I was very I was very disappointed, and I feel bad for the people in it.
Sure.
Really, I would have just done either have everybody. Newcomers or everybody actors, it just didn't work. Okay, also coming out this weekend, Peter Rabbit. We don't have Thursday nights on that, but it's looking at a box office of 16 million. So it's looking like 50 Shades Freed is going to be top with 33. I don't know, mid-table, probably 15, 17 to Paris. And Peter Rabbit doing 16 or more, that could be... Depends on whether that's going to be number two or struggling or coming in third behind Jumanji. Now, Peter Rabbit is another movie I actually reviewed for IGN this week.
Right.
I was really not expecting much from this at all. I wasn't looking forward to it. Do you know what? It's not terrible. Okay. I gave it a mid-table score. I think it was a 5.5. I watched it with a mix of adults and kids at a preview screening. The kids loved it.
And sure.
This is slapstick, family fun. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's like 90 minutes long. It's fine.
Which is great for that
kind of a movie. Nobody here is going to be boasting that this is on their resume. This is not a, you know, oh my God, I was a star of Peter Rabbit. No one is going to be doing that. But, you know, Donald Gleason is good as one of the human stars. Rose Byrne is great as one of the human stars. She does really well. Sam Elliott Sam Neill. It's not Sam Elliott. Sam Neill is in it at the beginning as a farmer. That's good. The voice cast of the rabbits, to be honest with you, pretty good. They're okay. Good fun. Margot Robbie, James Corden. A lot of people got very upset when they heard the voice of James Corden coming out of Peter Rabbit on the trailer. There was a lot of backlash for that. People just didn't like it, which is fine.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, actually, do you know what? Peter Rabbit's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
In this, it's not exactly the interpretation of, I think, the original Beatrix Potter character.
Sure.
But do you know what? It works for this. Someone said the other day that he's kind of like, it's like Home Alone, where Peter Rabbit is both Kevin and the bandits. Where it's kind of interesting. Do you know what? It's a family film that is very much aimed at the kids rather than the adults. It's not like a Disney Pixar movie where, you know, it's like everybody comes and everybody takes something away. The kids are going to really enjoy it. I think it's going to do pretty well. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a sequel. It's throwaway. It's really basic slapstick comedy, by the numbers stuff. Kind of annoying at times, but it just stays the right side of it.
Yeah, I just... well, there's nothing out there for families. There's nothing out there for families right now.
And Paddington 2, which was much better and criminally ignored by audiences.
Yeah, I'm just wondering why they may not have... Again, I don't have a release schedule in front of me, but why wouldn't you maybe release this a little bit closer to Easter?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, I know that there is a vacancy for family film right now, but there's still... lots vying for people's attention.
Well, and next week Black Panther comes out.
Exactly.
Which, you know, a lot of the people who will be, I mean, not the younger end of the market, but certainly sort of the middle to top end of the kids who are going to go see this.
I just question the release date. Like, this is a dump.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm quite surprised by that as well. I think it'll have a strong opening weekend for this type of thing.
Yeah.
And then I think, unfortunately, Black Panther's going to bite into
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So, we got through a lot. Dimitri, I'm afraid we've run out of time.
Again?
I know.
Oh, my head.
Unfortunately, we have to go home. We're effectively being evicted.
We are being evicted, but I'm going to be taking up this seat very shortly again to do anatomy.
Indeed. So, Dimitri, where can we find you on social media?
Again, it's at DMovies1701. At DMovies1701. Please support me. I will support you back. I will talk. I've been enjoying the conversations with the people that watch this show.
Yep.
You do a fantastic job. I'm sorry that the Inschneider is not feeling well, but it's always a pleasure and an honor to be asked to come and do this. So thank you very much. Thanks for listening to me.
I'm sure he'll be back next week, and it's always a pleasure to have you here. So thank you very much. So this has been Meet the Movie Press for another week. My name is Simon Thompson. You can find me on social media at ShowbizSimon on Twitter and Instagram, and this is Simon Thompson on Facebook. If you've liked the show, do comment, do subscribe, do tell anybody that will listen until they ask you to shut up. Have a great week. We'll be back next week. Have a good one.
See you.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.